Hey guys, Ben here. Just a quick introduction for this podcast. Two interviews. I spoke with, of course, our boy Todd Dybas. Caught up with him about what's going on with this crazy NBA offseason. How are the Wizards impacted, if at all, by what's going on with the Celtics, the 76ers, and so on. And then Rob Dowster with NBC Sports, the college basketball guru there. He talked to me about the Wizards, the 52nd pick, and some of these prospects. So another fun jam-packed podcast. Let's not waste any more time. Here we go, talking Wizards and the NBA draft.
You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, and we are back for a very special edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast because it's sort of like getting the band back together, even if we're not in the same room where I can see his give me those looks when I say something inane. It's still good to talk to him on the podcast, Mr. Todd Dybas. I can't say how are you doing because we talk all the time, but from the podcast perspective, how are you doing in the offseason? Do people always ask me, what is Todd up to?
Hello, Cleveland. I'm doing well.
Well, good. Well,
how are you? Do you get that reference? Will anyone get that? Hello, Cleveland. This is not a LeBron reference.
Hello, Cleveland. Is that, Almost Famous or is that Drew Carey?
It's neither. You know, there's a famous rock and roll documentary. Mockumentary, if you will, where the band, I believe, yells, "Hello, Cleveland," unless I butchered this and we're going to have to start over. But my understanding is that this is, Spinal Tap. They were confused about what city they were in and they got lost in the bowels of the arena. And every time they turned the corner, they thought they were about to hit the stage and would yell, "Hello, Cleveland." And then, turns out they're not in Cleveland.
Well, I'm sure you're right, whether you're not or even if you're not, it's the appropriate city to discuss because we're talking on the hell is today, Monday, and there's been a lot of Cleveland talk in the news. Now, we're not going to get into that because I just spent the last podcast I did earlier today talking a lot about Cleveland, but I saved other good stuff for you because I know.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, you're listening to the Locked On Wizards podcast. You know the deal, but I have to say it because otherwise some people may be new or you forget. You never know. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, please do so. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you do your podcasting. If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's at Locked On Wizards, at Ben Standing, or for Todd, Mr. Washington Times Sports Section himself, at Todd_Dybas. We are talking on Monday. The NBA draft is Thursday. Free agency starts a little bit after that. So there's a bunch to get into. The NBA offseason is crazy. Here's the number one thing I want to know about the draft. I want to know what you think of what's going to happen. You ready?
I'm assuming this is about the hype and massive anticipation surrounding the 52nd overall selection.
Oh, we'll get to that. We're building up to that. Don't you worry.
Oh, okay.
Here's what I want to know, because we were talking about this earlier. I'm pretty sure that there is a big transaction going to happen in the NBA world, but I think it's only happening after the draft. And I believe that is that Adrian Wojnarowski is going from Yahoo to ESPN. So here's what I want to know. Will Woj, who famously spoils all the draft picks in the draft by like a good pick or two,
which is a core reason why he's, I think, ESPN's like, this guy's killing us, killing our broadcasts. We're gonna finally give him what he wants and hire him.
So with that said, he is still for at least that one day not ESPN. Will he spoil the draft?
Oh, 110%.
So he's still gonna give him the dig, even though technically he'll be there, be an employee there, like in like the next day.
Yeah, he'll spend the whole day giving some executive at ESPN validation to send emails saying, "This is why we're doing this. This is why." The pick's not even in, and he's announcing what it is on Twitter. This is why we're doing this, to bring this guy. Assuming it's going to happen, it's been odd that there's been the reports about it, but then there's been no action. There's been nothing from his side. Have you talked to our friend Mr. Michael Lee about this yet?
I've inquired, but I don't get too far on that, and it's the man's livelihood, so I don't push, so... Right. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I guess we can say, since he announced it on Twitter, that Mr. Michael Lee and his wife had a child.
Yes.
So congrats.
Congratulations to Mr. Michael Lee is what we want to say, for sure.
How about them apples? So I'm definitely going to be fascinated by seeing what Woj does, and how everybody comments on that, because I think that's fascinating. You know, what would be also fascinating if Woj, with whatever secret methods he uses, got sicked on the current administration situation or just Washington D.C. politics in general. I mean, with the way the leaks fall out of there, he would be killing it. He would like make Woodward and Bernstein look like a bunch of amateurs.
that would be interesting. There are a lot of leaks. When you're seeing stories referencing 9 sources or 18 sources confirmed.
Like 20 sources?
That's pretty leaky.
I think one story I literally saw was like 30 sources or something. It was insane. All right. So, not here to talk about the past, Mark McGwire. We're here to talk about the present and the future with regards to the Wizards, the NBA, and a whole bunch of other stuff. One topic I know that you and I, though, not Wizards related. We'll get to the Wizards. Look, it's the draft. There's not that much to talk about the Wizards. They don't have a first-round pick. You know this. We'll get to the 52nd pick, and we'll throw darts at the board. And free agency, we'll get to that next week. Danny Ainge, you and I have been like discussing, like, okay, what's he doing here? In the previous podcast, I talked with Jerry Brewer about a bunch of things, including Mark.
Never heard of him.
yeah, exactly. Your name did come up in the conversation, for what it's worth. But we talked about Markelle Fultz, and he was explaining how much he likes the kid and this, that, and the other. But at the same point, Boston did trade out of it. And, you know, okay, hey, you can justify it, absolutely, right? You think, hey, Boston maybe doesn't think that Markelle Fultz is that much better than the guy they're going to get at 3. They get an extra first-round pick out of it. Could be a really good pick. Maybe it won't, but we'll see. So they get more assets out of it. But this goes back to, and you were saying to me, what I don't quite get what Danny Ainge is doing. Totally with you. But it goes back to a conversation. I'm not being a jackass here. I'm just saying,
I'll determine that. Thank you very much.
What's up?
I said, I'll determine that.
Oh, okay. But like back at the trading deadline and during the playoffs, like I kept saying, I don't understand what Danny Ainge is doing. He has all these assets. Cleveland looks like they're vulnerable. Now, ultimately, Cleveland won the East rather handily, but, you know, it's hard to say, right? I mean, Isaiah Thomas got hurt. Boston didn't make any kind of moves. Yada, yada, yada. Anyway, he has all these assets. At some point, you have to do something. You can't just draft all the players. 2 years ago, he had 8 picks, I think. He literally drafted them all. Even his first round, one of his first round picks isn't on the team or in the league even right now. And now he's in this position where he's even more and more picks. He could make a huge move before Thursday. He could trade the 3rd pick and other stuff to maybe get Jimmy Butler. Maybe he gets into Paul George sweepstakes, whatever. But at some point, he's got to do something. And I feel happy that you are on my side now with the whole, what is Danny Ainge doing?
Yeah, I wasn't as put off at the trade deadline. I agreed with a portion of your line of thought in that they should have done something to bolster. I understand why they didn't end up with a Paul George or Jimmy Butler level player at that point, but I do think they would have been well served by another quality veteran guy coming off the bench just to fight Cleveland. And, you know, they had a hard time with the Wizards as well. Wizards, if you haven't heard this before, the Wizards had a lot of opportunities to win that series. You know, so that was no easy task for Boston either, just getting to the Eastern Conference Finals to play Cleveland. However, at this point, the totality of the picks and the totality of the options, I will be extremely baffled if he does not convert some of that into guys. These aren't just guys now who are kind of, you know, it would be nice if you could get this really good player who plays over here for a team that's not very good. Paul George wants out of there and told them he's going to leave. And Jimmy Butler, I can't imagine, is entrenched in Chicago either. And who knows what's going to happen with Blake Griffin, and there's the Gordon Hayward situation and all these things. So to me, this is the time for Ainge to again pull a Ray Allen, KG level thing of bringing in two fantastic guys. You can still keep several of your major parts because you have 8 billion assets, you know, first round pick after first round pick, not just this season, but, you know, for years to come. So I'm with you here. I'm confused with so many assets already in hand, why you would pass on Markelle Fultz just to get another one. Like, you can't accomplish something with the massive spread of things that you already have, and you get to pick Fultz. You think you can do better than that, apparently. So that would be the only explanation to me, is that you think you can do better at least in the next 5 years or so by not taking Fultz and instead taking an extra pick, the guy you're going to take at number three, and then using all your other assets and flipping that into something more significant than Markelle Fultz and what you could have flipped the assets you already had in hand into.
And also, in terms of the now of it all, last season, they were going into this offseason, well, okay, at the last trading deadline, they weren't going to be coming up to a lot of bad contract situations this offseason, even though Wizards killer Kelly Olynyk is a free agent. For the most part, their team's pretty much intact. But next offseason, Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley are both free agents. So you have to deal with that on top of everything else. So can you even what's your team even going to look like? It's one of the reasons why, and I want to ask you this in a little bit, but like, if we look 3 years down the road and try to project who's the best team in the East, it's even hard to say that it will be Boston, knowing they have all these assets, because I can't figure out what their core is. At least I look at Philly and I see, okay, if they stay healthy, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Markelle Fultz, I don't even know what Boston is right now. Al Horford's probably their most obvious player other than Thomas, and he's going to be an old man in another year. So they have to do something. I don't necessarily know if that means Jimmy Butler. Paul George is a little bit dicey, obviously, because he's the rental. But it is weird that I keep seeing today Cleveland's trying to figure out how to get Jimmy Butler. Cleveland's in the mix for Paul George. Cleveland has nothing to trade unless they're giving up Kevin Love, which they may have to, but that would be like kind of a big piece to give up. Boston could give up all kinds of crap. They'll never miss it and have a ridiculously good team. We'll see.
Yeah, the rental thing, the Paul George rental thing for Boston makes zero sense to me. Then why did you wait all this time?
Right,
you were like positioning and posturing to accumulate all these things. You're waiting for LeBron to age somehow, someday, and stop averaging triple-doubles in the NBA Finals and to come a little closer to Earth. I won't say back to Earth because that's not happening anytime soon, but can come down a little bit. And then you think, you know, you may have enough pieces to give him a fair fight. So I don't understand the Paul George rental thing would make zero sense to me for Boston. And what you would just, why did you hang on to all this stuff? Why did you accumulate all this stuff to get one season out of this guy when you still have to tussle with LeBron based on what we just saw against the Warriors? I mean, he's still peak LeBron all this time later. So that would make no sense to me.
Not to start sounding like this is like a Bill Simmons podcast where we just talk about the Celtics, but one more thought on this. It's important to talk. If we're going to say that the Wizards are contenders, you got to look at the other contenders. So that's what we're doing. Anyway, the one argument I could see Danny Ainge making for saying he's not going to go crazy this offseason is, if you look at Cleveland's situation, the idea of LeBron leaving doesn't seem as crazy after this year. Doesn't seem as crazy as I what may have thought even a couple of weeks ago. Especially in light of they parted ways with GM David Griffin. Let's see what the fallout of that is. Is that something that pisses LeBron off? Does it not? Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe either way, after one more year, he just looks at it and says, hey, we can't, especially if they were to say lose to Golden State, if that were to happen again, he's like, I can't get any further here. I need to go somewhere else. Plus, there's the whole thing. He wants to go to LA to be a movie mogul, whatever. So that would be the only thing I could see for Ainge saying, does he think LeBron only hangs around for one more year? And if he has all these things, then he'll have a better sense of what he needs at that moment. That would be the only thing I could imagine.
Yeah, I mean, that's an awful lot of what if for years of building stuff and waiting. So, it just doesn't make much sense to me on the whole. At this point, but we'll see. I mean, he flipped a bunch of stuff into a title before. We'll see what he does now. But I'm with you here that you need action, and it's time to stop waiting. And you need multi-year guys. This is not a rental situation. You can't wait this long and then say, oh, we're just going, in this one-year scenario. That doesn't make any sense.
So Philly and Boston make this really interesting trade, especially because it intersects these two teams who've been acquiring assets, to see it all connect is pretty fascinating. And Philly gets a guard that they really need. And when you look at that core of, again, Fultz and Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and Mario Dario Saric, that is a frightening team in 3 years. I'm not too much worried about them next year. I mean, they beat the Wizards without any of them, basically, a couple times last year. But that aside, maybe they make the playoffs next year, but I'm not worrying about them.
That's what I was going to say. They're going to be a fun first-round playoff matchup to watch probably next year. They won't win, but maybe they'll pull one game and make it five games, and, we'll start that quote-unquote process, no pun intended, seeing what they got.
So presumably the Wizards, barring the unforeseen here with their moves, even if they trade Gortat, if you assume that they get the equivalent of Gortat back in some way, shape, or form, and they bring back the same team, still a team that won 49 games, but so this trade, Boston, as we just discussed, at the moment they didn't get any better; they just got more assets. Man, we'll see what the third pick overall is. If it's another Jaylen Brown, that's interesting and fine, but that's not going to – if I'm a Wizards person, I'm not going to be like, oh, my Lord, they just got another Jaylen Brown. We're never going to keep up. Now, they're in position to sign a Gordon Hayward. If they make a move to, as we're discussing, that bigger Jimmy Butler kind of move, now all of a sudden things start getting interesting. But I didn't look at this trade and think to myself, well, boy, the Wizards are falling back off of that alone. I mean – the Wizards have nowhere to go. We've talked about this, but that trade in and of itself didn't have me thinking, well, the Wizards are hosed at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think their standing has changed one iota. Their problems are the same. Their positives are the same. The bench is a problem. Their flexibility to adjust around that bench is a problem. Their starters can play with anyone in the conference. I agree. Obviously you see Philadelphia, you see a more clear path for Philadelphia now, than you did a couple years ago. There were a lot of projects there. I mean, they still have a lot of projects and they need these guys to be healthy. Obviously, you see the Celtics are very good. And if they want to challenge LeBron, they're going to have to really load up because they clearly did not have enough, even without Isaiah. It still was apparent that they didn't have enough. If he had played, they would have had multiple problems still. So, you know, and who else? Who knows what happens next year? Maybe Miami makes a move, and then with Dragic and Whiteside and another very good player, they become a very interesting team. But I at top of the Eastern Conference, I think things are pretty status quo, and you see after this trade, you see this projected core for Philadelphia that could be interesting, but it's not going to be anytime soon, and they need all those guys to get healthy. So, unfortunately for the Wizards are what they are, but that also should mean a top four team in the conference next year.
All right, more with my conversation with Todd Dybas on a upcoming podcast. All right, and now we're going to swing over towards the NBA draft side of things. Of course, the NBA draft is on Thursday, and I know that everybody's really focused on Markelle Fultz and who the Celtics are going to pick third and these other game-changing players coming in. Whatever, who cares? The real fun starts at number 52 in every NBA draft. We all know this. That's where the Wizards pick. Here to help us decipher what the hell the Wizards might end up with at that spot is the man from NBC Sports College Basketball Talk, Mr. Rob Dowster. Rob, thank you for taking your time during your busy offseason to help us deal with this Wizards fun stuff.
Anything for you, Ben. As soon as you texted me and told me that you needed me to talk about the 52nd pick, how can I say no?
I mean, seriously, what? I don't even know what else you could be doing on this nice summer day that would be better than talking about the 52nd pick, but I'm glad I could add some fun to your to your day.
Well, I appreciate that.
All right, so let's just get into this. Obviously, we all understand up front, we have zero idea what the hell is going to be there at 52 for the Wizards. It could literally be anything. If you look at Draft Express rankings versus Chad Ford versus somebody else's, picks 40 through 100 are all over the map. But we're going to do our best to kind of get a sense of some of these guys here that the Wizards could get. We all kind of know the drill. The Wizards have terrible backup guards behind John Wall and Bradley Beal. They could use an athletic four, maybe a center if they trade Marcin Gortat. They definitely need some shooting. But bottom line is you take whatever you think is the best player, whatever that is, it can help you now, I think is needed, most upside, whatever. So let's go through this, Rob. Here's how we're going to do this. Rather than just me say, hey, what do you think of this guy, and you tell me something, we're going to play this like game show style. I'll give you the name of two players. You have to vote one of them off the island.
All right, let's do it.
All right. So I mentioned the Wizards need point guards. Two guys who would be, I think, great fits for the Wizards. We'll see if they're available. Big 12 rivals. You got Monty Morris from Iowa State, sort of that consummate point guard, and then Frank Mason from Kansas, National Player of the Year. In terms of the NBA level, which guy do you like better?
Ooh, that's a tough, because I like them both, man. They both kind of fit in that Fred VanVleet, T.J. McConnell mold where they're just good basketball players and good point guards, and you're going to look up in 5 or 6 years and be like, oh, wow, that guy's still on the NBA roster. How about that? If I had to pick one, though, I think I would go with Frank Mason. I just think he's a better shooter than Monte Morris. And in this day and age, you got to be able to shoot if you're going to be a point guard and hang around the NBA. So give me Frank Mason over Monte Morris.
Is it sort of where we are with college basketball that the guy who's the national – when's the last time a national player of the year is a guy who's like a mid-second round pick? I'm trying to remember. Is that happening more – I just feel like that doesn't happen as much anymore or rarely. Am I missing – forgetting something or –
No, I mean, I can't. It's a weird year in that, one, Frank Mason, like, what makes him so good are things that aren't really great at the NBA level, right? Like, he's a tough-minded kid that makes big shots and wants to take over games, but it's really hard to do that when you're a 5'11 point guard, right? So, I think it was just a weird year. And the other part of it is, like, none of the star freshmen, as good as they are, really came out and put themselves into that conversation the way they probably should have been. Lonzo Ball was probably the closest, right? But I still think that he was, you know, he ended up being a first-team All-American for us, but I don't think it was really close between him and Frank Mason, who should have been Player of the Year. So, yeah, you're right. It's a little bit weird how it turned out, but that's just kind of the way it goes when you're a senior in college basketball. If you're a senior at that level, it means you probably weren't all that good of an NBA prospect to begin with.
As for Morris, as an aside, Kevin Pelton, I don't know how he comes up with these rankings. I just talked about it in a different podcast earlier, but like he had Monty Morris like somewhere in like his top 20 of overall prospects in the whole draft. He really, his numbers really like him. I don't know what that is. What do you think, he's got a shot to be a NBA starter someday?
I don't know if he'd be an NBA starter, but I mean, I certainly think he has a shot to carve out a career in the NBA. Like I said, when you get to the second round of the draft, you're kind of looking for a lottery ticket, more or less. And you're going to bet on the guys that are 6'9" with a crazy athletic ability that can knock down threes that literally can't do anything else and hope that you can develop along the way. But you're drafting Monty Morris and Frank Mason. Like, you know what you're getting. You're getting a guy that's going to be able to contribute to your team for, you know, 5 or 6 years, a guy that's going to be a good locker room presence, but he's never going to end up being a star. So if you have the choice between cashing in on a lottery ticket potentially or getting the guy that is probably about as effective as like your run-of-the-mill backup point guard in the NBA, you take the lottery ticket on the off chance that he ends up being a star, because you can't – it's a lot easier to find a backup point guard on the free agent market than it is to find a star on the free agent market, if that makes sense. So that's kind of what the draft is about, those lottery tickets. And that's why a guy like Monte Morris or Frank Mason would even fall to that level, even though they're both, excellent basketball players that are going to carve out a career in the NBA, I'm sure of it.
You say it's easy to find a backup point guard. Wizards fans right now are saying, Rob, have you looked at their Wizards last 5 years? They can't get a backup point guard ever.
You know who's their backup point guard? 2013 National Player of the Year, Trey Burke from the University of Michigan.
Oh, Lord. if he's the backup point guard again this year, people will not be happy. I'll just leave it at that. That was he did not. Trey Burke was a super nice guy whenever I dealt with him, but in terms of on the court, he did not exactly get people excited. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, that's too bad. I was hoping he'd be a star, man. You know what I think it is? I think it's those Michigan guys. John Beilein makes you look a lot better than you actually are.
It may be. It's definitely, yeah, a lot of those guys have not – some of them have hit, but not, some of them have definitely flamed out for sure. All right, let's stay with the point guards. One of these guys though, is one of those upside guys you're talking about. Another guy is more of a, okay, we kind of see where he is. Kobe Simmons, a big, tall point guard from Arizona against the local kid, Melo Trimble.
I think Kobe Simmons has worlds more potential than Melo Trimble, and there is no way in the world that I would want Kobe Simmons on my basketball team. So I'm going to go with Melo.
Wow.
Melo falls into that same conversation for me as, you know, the Frank Masons and the Monte Morrises. They're just good veteran point guards. He knows how to win. He makes big shots. He's not gonna lose you any games. He may not win you games, but if you get him on the court for 10, 15 minutes a night, he's not going to lose you any games. Plus, he's a hometown kid, so, you know, that angle is kind of cool as well. But Kobe Simmons, yeah, pass.
All right. That's interesting. I didn't really have much of a sense of him myself, but I know he's a name that people have asked me about him a little bit, and you see the size, and you're from that lottery ticket perspective, seems like he's the fit. But wow, that's pretty strong. Stay away from Rob. All right, we're gonna pass that note to Ernie Grunfeld. Stay away from Kobe Simmons. I don't even know if Melo is gonna get drafted, but sure, why not? He seems to have a knack for making plays, and sometimes that's the kind of instinctive thing you can't teach, and it doesn't show up in whatever ratings are coming up with. So he's got something, but I don't know. His career also kind of went sideways after that great start.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that his start, I really don't think he was all that different of a basketball player throughout his career. I think mostly he just kind of reached the ceiling of what his potential was as a freshman. And if he came out and was a first-round pick as a freshman, I don't think it would have changed what his career is at any point. We just kind of realized when he came back to school, you know what, maybe he wasn't quite as good as we thought he was going to be. And frankly, I don't know if he would have gone through the whole process as a freshman. I know he was projected as being like a top 20, top 30 pick, late first round guy. I would not have been surprised to see him drop once they get to the pre-draft process and they're like, okay, this is a 6'2" scoring point guard that doesn't make players all that much better and kind of needs the ball in his hands to be effective. So, like I said, Melo is what he is. I think he'll be a good backup point guard in the NBA. I think he'll be able to hang around for a little while. And worst case scenario, he'll probably end up making a lot of money playing basketball overseas. But I don't know how great of an NBA prospect he is. And that should tell you a little bit about Kobe Simmons that I would rather have Melo Trimble than Kobe Simmons.
Absolutely. All right, let's stay with the backcourt, moving over towards the wing side of things. Like I said, the Wizards really never had a backup behind Bradley Beal last year, and if they lose Bojan Bogdanović in free agency, they'll need another shooter off the bench. Two guys here, you got Josh Hart, who is also the he was biggest player of the year in that National Player of the Year conversation. And then you got Tyler Dorsey from Oregon, Final Four team. He came in for a workout with the Wizards. They're not the exact same player, but like I said, they're both on the wing. What do you got there, Josh Hart or Tyler Dorsey?
I mean, I would take Josh Hart in a second, but I also think there's very little chance that he makes it to pick 52. I think that Hart is a guy. I don't think you use a first-round pick on him, but I think he ends up being an early second-round pick. I don't think he makes it out of the 30s. In my mind, he can contribute right away at the NBA level. When you get guys like that in the second round, I don't think that they end up lasting all that long. So I would say Josh Hart, but I'm going to say you're much more likely to hear Tyler Dorsey's name called than you are to hear Josh Hart.
I'm with you. I don't know if either one of these guys is going to get there, but, you know, dare to dream, I suppose. And seeing as how the one local college basketball team that Josh Hart wanted to play for didn't get him, would be a good story if somehow the professional basketball team were able to get him.
I won't tell JT3 you said that.
I'm sure I'll probably tell him that someday. just quickly on Tyler Dorsey. I mean, he came in here. He looked pretty impressive. He was in here against Frank Mason. He was in the workouts. The little bit we saw, he was going up against Mason defensively and seemed to hold his own, got him to force some shots. Of course, that's, you know, one-on-one. It doesn't really mean as much. But athletic, he can shoot. If I tell you the Wizards get him, how do you feel about him potentially like being as like a backup for Bradley Beal?
I don't think he's bad. I don't think he's really a shooting guard, though. I don't think he's as big as Bradley Beal is. What can you say, that 6'4"? I think that's a little bit generous, shall we say. But to me, I think he wants to be a point guard, but he's not a point guard. He's more of a scorer and a shooter. You saw what he did during the NCAA tournament, man. He was as good as anybody during those 3 weeks in March. So I think he played his way into potentially being a draft pick. But the good thing about Tyler Dorsey for him is that no matter what happens with him, he actually has a Greek passport. I think his, like, grandmother on his mom's side is from Greece or something like that. But he can play for the Greek national team, which means that if he wanted to go play in the Greek league overseas, he'd be able to make a lot of money because he wouldn't count as one of the caps that you could have on American players in those leagues. So his more profitable career from a basketball perspective may end up being as a European player. And, hey, you know what? That's not a bad way to live, living in Greece and making seven figures as a basketball player. I wouldn't mind doing that.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I always try to tell people, especially like when somebody like Melo Trumbull leaves early, people are like, oh, so what a dummy, you know, should have stayed. I'm like, no, you're missing the point. You're viewing it from the NBA perspective only. The entire world plays basketball and they pay good money. So, you know, I'm not saying don't stay in school. I'm just saying if you decide to leave because you want to start getting paid, just because the NBA might say no doesn't mean you can't have a really good life playing basketball for a living. So definitely not a bad way to go through life.
Yeah, not a bad way at all, man. Can't complain about that.
All right, I'm gonna shake it up on you here. We're gonna go with a three-man question here. We're gonna move into the front court. Like I said, the Wizards could use an athletic big man, an athletic four behind Markieff Morris. They could use some more shooting in the front court. They just need more depth in general. So here are three guys, not all exactly the same, but people were asking, so we want to get your take. You got Cam Oliver, right? Is that his name right? Cam Oliver from Nevada?
Yep, Cam Oliver.
All right, so I haven't seen too much of him because I didn't get to see tons of Nevada, but a lot of people, some guy was telling me he's the Draymond Green of this class, that he'll blow everybody away once he gets the NBA. You got Kyle Kuzma from, what, Utah? He's got sort of that stretch four type. And then you got Devin Robinson, Florida State, a combo forward, athletic guy there. What, those three guys, what do you got?
So I would take Kyle Kuzma in a heartbeat out of those three. But again, like Josh Hart, I just don't see Kyle Kuzma dropping that far. I think he's a guy that's going to end up being an early second round pick. When you're 6'9" like he is, with the ability to shoot that he has, you just don't last that far in the NBA draft these days. So I guess we can cross him off the list. And I'm going to say Cam Oliver. I do like Devin Robinson's potential. I mean, he's a guy that can probably guard multiple positions. He's got some length. He can make threes. But Cam Oliver is a guy, I think the Draymond Green comparison in terms of what his skill set is fair, but I hesitate to compare anybody drafted at that level to someone that's a top 15 player in the NBA. I mean, he's 6'7". He's got a 40-inch vert. He's got a 7'1" wingspan. He shoots almost 40% three, nearly 5 attempts a game, and he averaged 2.5 blocks. And there's nothing more valuable in the NBA right now than a guy that can have multi-positional defensive ability, that can block shots and defend the rim, and that can stretch the floor and make threes on the other end of the floor. The reason that the Warriors are so good is because they have guys like Kevin Durant and Draymond Green who can operate as playmakers and perimeter ball handlers and make threes that also happen to have the length to defend the rim. So Cam Oliver is a guy in that sense that has some potential in the NBA long term. I don't know if it's I wouldn't bet on him being as good as Draymond Green, but I think he's a guy that could end up carving out a role. He certainly is one of those lottery ticket types that we talked about.
All right. Let's move on to the next matchup. Two ACC guys, Dwayne Bacon, averaged over 21 points at Florida State, yet I see some, I think Draft Express has him like outside the top 60 prospects. And then you got Jaren Blossom game from Clemson, if I'm right, sort of like an undersized power forward type. So not the same player, but two ACC guys. Who do you like there?
I don't love either of them. I think Dwayne Bacon is a little bit too much of a ISO scorer that doesn't have the kind of range that you want out of a shooting guard. Whereas Jaren Blossom game has the body to really be kind of one of those like small ball fours that could play the three, guard different positions. But he shot like 43% from three as a junior, and that fell off a cliff as a senior. That said, when I saw him last summer, I really liked him. I saw him at the Nike Skills Academy. I thought he had a chance to be an early second-round pick last year. I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up being a second-round pick this year. I don't know if you have this guy on the list, but Davon Reed, another guy from the ACC, I think I like more than any of those guys. I think he has the size and the ability to be a really good defender in the NBA. He's 6'6". He's got a long wingspan. He can also knock down some threes. And I just trust Jim Laranjega to be a guy that can get dudes ready for the NBA and ready to be really good basketball players. So if let's put it like this. If Jaren Blossom game is there, I think you've got to take him at 52. That's just too good of a value to pass up there. So after that, I think I would take Davon Reed over Dwayne Bacon. I'm just not a Bacon guy.
I'm not really a Bacon guy either, but maybe that's because I'm Jewish. Okay, that's bad. Sorry.
You're going to have to edit that one out.
Nah, screw it. All right, let's go a couple more here. Two guys that came in to work out for the Wizards, Andrew White with Syracuse, scoring threat from the wing, and Peter Jok, if I'm saying that right, another 6'6 guard out of Iowa. He seemed to be pretty – they both actually were very confident with how they performed for the Wizards. I think Draft Express has them both outside the top 60, but, you never know. It just takes one team to think – otherwise, either one of those guys tickle your fancy.
I like Andrew White a little bit more than Peter Jok. I think Andrew White is a better overall shooter than Peter Jok is, and I think he has a little bit more potential on the defensive end of the floor. I think he's a little bit more athletic too. I'm just not sold on Peter Jok as being an NBA player. But I mean, look, when you can shoot and you can score the way that Jok can, you always got a potential to find a spot and carve out a career, maybe like as an Anthony Morrow kind of dude. But I think I would take Andrew White, even though I know this is a DC podcast. I'm not supposed to be saying something nice about a Syracuse fan.
I think Andrew White was like, I think he said he's from the area. He was at Michael Jordan's last home game. So
some like Richmond or someone in the Tidewater area down Norfolk, maybe.
Yeah.
One of those places.
The DMV expands. Like at some point, the DMV will include like North Carolina and Kentucky. Who knows? Thanks, everybody. All right, this last matchup here, this one's just for me, more or less. LJ Peak versus Rodney Pryor. And I asked this because two Georgetown guards. I asked this because Fran Fraschilla just recently did a conference call with reporters, and I was on it just to listen. But somehow they asked if I wanted to ask a question. So after I fumbled something about the Wizards, I asked about those guys. And he said he likes Pryor better than Peak. And I've also heard somebody tell me that Pryor's been looking better in workouts than Peak. But just from what you saw them play last year, or Peak played 3 years at Georgetown prior just last year, what's your sense of those two guys?
I would agree with everyone else and say that it's Rodney Pryor. I think Rodney Pryor has the physical tools to be a 3-and-D guy in the NBA. I don't think he's a star. I don't think he's a guy that that will be anything more than a role player off the bench. But I think he's got potential as an NBA player. Just because I think, you know, he started out as Robert Morris. He knows what the lower levels of basketball are like. He knows where he doesn't want to end up being. So, LJ Peak is more of a highly recruited guy. I don't think that. I don't want to say anything negative about him, but Rodney Pryor, some of those under the radar guys, they end up being the ones that you want to bet on, just because Bomani Jones has a saying that he likes to use called the can't go back all-stars. He knows where he's from and he can't go back. And I think Rodney Pryor is a guy that fits into that mold.
All right. I like it. I mean, Pryor definitely was impressive at times last year. I thought Peak was good too, though his shot is definitely what you would consider a work in progress. But I was a little surprised. When you look at the NBA draft site, there's not many of them. Draft Express is really and Chad Ford like the only two. And Draft Express has Peak at 46. And Pryor, I don't think, is even in their top 100. So that's the only reason I was a little surprised to hear that. But I don't really, as somebody who watched him play last year, I get it. I thought Pryor was really good. He's got much better 3-point shot and is very athletic. So that wouldn't stun me.
Can I throw out two more names for you?
Please.
Sedarius Thornwell and PJ Dozier, the two guys from South Carolina. Those are two. If you're looking for a guy that can step in and play immediately as a role player off the bench, you have two guys there that obviously know how to defend. They played for Frank Martin. They're going to be tough. They have the size and the length and the strength to play on the perimeter in the NBA. And I think Dozier, I like him a little bit more because I think he can play on the ball a little bit more. He's a better creator than Thornwell is. But both of those guys, in my mind, have potential to be role players as second-round picks in the NBA. And if you're looking for an immediate – I don't want to say impact guy because that might be coming on too strong. But if you're looking for a guy that can come off the bench and provide you with minutes at the NBA level right away next season for a contender, I think you look at those two guys and they should be able to do that.
All right. Now, they were on my list that didn't make the cut for our game. But, yeah, no, I mean, Thornwell in particular is somebody I've been looking at. That's definitely an interesting one. I was going to ask you your thoughts on Markel Fultz, if he's clearly the number one guy, but screw that. I'm sure my boy Casual Hoya would want me to, if I have you here, would want me to ask, what are you hearing about Patrick Ewing so far? Because they're all getting, the Naders are getting at least a scotch restless that he's not. I think people had this assumption he was going to walk into people's homes and be like, "Hi, I'm Patrick Ewing. I'd like your son to play for me." And that they would all say, "Absolutely, sign me up." That hasn't quite happened. He's gotten some guys. What's your sense early of the Patrick Ewing era as a coach, as a recruiter? We haven't seen him coach yet.
Well, here's a fun little Patrick Ewing story for you. The first live period weekend in April, I was at the Under Armour event, and he was there. I believe he was there to see Moses Brown, who's a top 10 prospect, a center from New York that was playing in that event. In the first game, Patrick Ewing sat courtside and never took off his Beats earbuds. He didn't have on the headphones. It was the earbuds. Never took them off for the entire game. Sat in the front row, and I never saw him looking up from his phone the entire time. So I don't know if that'll tell you anything, but that was my first impression of Patrick Ewing on the recruiting trail.
Wow, that's not a great impression. That's not going to go over well on the message boards. But oh well, it's early. I keep telling everybody not to panic yet. He got thrown into the 2017 group. 2018 is where we'll see some happening. But that said, they have like no roster right now. So
yeah, and you know it took a little while for Chris Mullin to get things turned around at St. John's, but things are on the upswing there. I think that eventually Patrick Ewing will do it. But, I mean, the big thing was, getting a guy that could be a killer recruiter for the local area. And I'm not convinced that they quite have that yet. I don't know. It's too early to say anything about what he's actually been able to do. The early returns have not been quite as positive as you would like. He hasn't won the press conference, so to speak, but I think it's too early to really say all that much about him.
Yeah, it definitely is, and I've tried sort of telling everybody that. The only thing I will say is that, you know, if they were going to make the move to move on from JT3, my hope was truly turn the page on what Georgetown has been for the last 30-something years. Not saying put it in the closet. I'm just saying enter the modern era, and I don't know if I'm getting that sense with Patrick Ewing. Obviously, the connections to Big John, but just the way their business is being conducted to this point, it feels very similar to what I've been dealing with for the last several years. So we'll see. Benefit of the doubt, but not overly encouraged at the moment. But, you know, time will tell.
Yeah, I think eventually it'll work itself out. I think Georgetown is too good of a job and too good of a program to lay dormant for that long.
Sure.
But I understand why Georgetown went the way that they went, but I do think that there were other options that they could have explored that might have paid off dividends quicker. But like I said, I mean, it took a couple of years for Chris Mullin to get St. John's headed in the right direction, but it feels like they're headed in the right direction. And I think that eventually Patrick Ewing will get this thing turned around.
All right, last question. Give me one name. Of everybody we talked about or anybody we didn't, who's the one guy, if you could tell the Wizards who's the best scenario at 52 for the, you know, upside, help now, whatever it is, who's the guy you would take?
Are we assuming that Markelle Fultz does not fall to the 52nd pick?
We don't have to assume that, but I'm going to guess he won't make it that far.
Yeah, I like PJ Dozier a lot just because I think he's a versatile guy. They could play a couple of different positions. That has a little bit of length. Like I like those guys that are multi-positional defenders and that have a little bit of skill and versatility in the offensive end. And the Cam Oliver, man, like, look, you can't teach that kind of length. You can't teach that kind of athleticism. And it's very difficult to teach guys that have that length and have that athleticism to be able to shoot. And he can do all three of those things. So, like I said, if you're looking for a lottery ticket, I think that Cam Oliver is the guy that kind of fills that role to a point.
All right. Good stuff. Rob, I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Ben.
All right. There you go. NBA draft preview with our great friend of the podcast, Rob Dowster, with college basketball talk over on NBC Sports. A lot of interesting insight there from him on these potential prospects. We'll see what the Wizards end up with. Probably none of these guys, because that's how these things tend to work, right? It's the people you don't assume they're going to take are the ones that they end up taking. If you missed it, of course, Jerry Brewer with the Washington Post and I talked at good length about the Wizards, John Wall's contract situation in relation to Paul George, what's going on with Cleveland and all their changes, Markelle Fultz, is he really the number one player in the draft, and a whole bunch more. So check that out. And as I mentioned earlier, Todd and I talked for a bit longer. I will play the rest of that podcast, the rest of that conversation, I should say, tomorrow. And we'll again, Thursday NBA draft, we will be there at the Verizon Center to see what the Wizards do. Until next time, see you guys.